I'm gonna go right, like, just let's just zoom right into it.
No, I want to have a few more awkward silences.
Oh, I like those.
Just kidding. Okay, go. I as soon as I said it, I knew you were gonna do that. Fine. Tip number one: the right expectations.
Oh, let's explain that. What does the right expectations mean in your mind?
Are you praying?
No, I'm just listening intently.
The right expectations actually can be sort of, it could go in a bunch of different directions. The first one is having the right expectations actually also needs to match your dog's experience level and their age. And I don't want to get too hung up on age, because sometimes people get really, really specific about age because they think at a certain age the dog should be able to do X, Y, Z and so forth. And when my dog's this age, what should I be training it and where should I be? Well, it really depends on where you are with your foundation level. And the thing with walking and the right expectations is if you've not really taught your dog how to walk on leash, because I'm not sure if you realize this, but it is very much a trained skill for 99% of dogs out there. There are very few dogs that just, you attach a leash and they walk magically down the street without ever pulling. We have to train our dogs how to understand to keep the leash loose for us, how to walk at our side, how to change directions, how to leave things when we ask them to, how to, you know, combat distractions, how to not get worried about loud noises. There are so many things that happen on a walk, and if we haven't taken the time to actually teach our dogs how to do that and we just expect them to be able to go out and walk like a pro, we're not being realistic about our expectations, and essentially we end up setting our dog up for failure. So we do need to make sure that our expectations are the right ones and they are realistic.
Yeah, I think, and to add on to that, this is a struggle that I had. This is a struggle that I know a lot of students have. You know, we get to talk to our life skills students frequently in the halls, and you get a foundation, and maybe this is where you are. You've got like a foundation. Sometimes your dog is walking great on a loose leash in at your side. And the moment a distraction comes by, or the moment you like, how about this one? I know a lot of people that will walk out wherever it is, let's say to the end of your street, or you're headed around the block or whatever, and you get to that coming home point and all of a sudden your dog forgets every skill that they've learned. You need to understand, you need to have the right expectations for your dog. So what does that mean? You know, maybe you change how far those walks are. Maybe you change where you're walking. Maybe you just need to reinforce that first quarter and then really work your butt off to make your way back. But having...
You just reminded me of a story.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a dog that that I was training, and I had a lot of trouble actually walking towards the park area where I would go to like throw something and exercise her. And then once we would exercise her, she would walk back like just perfect. And what started to happen is because I was in a bit of a routine and we would head to the park and she knew fun things happened at the park and we were going to play and do all kinds of things, it really actually made walking to the park a little more challenging. So instead of putting her in that scenario where she could just learn to drag me, I either A, put her in the car and drove the 50 feet to where the park was.
Right.
I would take her out so we weren't rehearsing pulling. We'd do our thing, we'd play, and then I could walk back at that point and then go back and get my car. Sounds crazy, but it was to work on not letting her rehearse the process. Or the second thing that I would do is I would walk a quarter of the way to the park and then turn around and walk back to my house. And then I would just repeat that pattern so that as she started to get ramped up, as we got closer to the park, I would turn and walk back to the house and she'd be like, hey, where are we going? Right. So it put me more in the driver's seat rather than just monotonously practicing the same thing over and over and over again. Again, I'm changing my expectations to allow her to not rehearse the wrong things and then try to redirect her attention to something that's a little bit more appropriate.
Mary H.
Our friend Mary.
Dropping the super sticker.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you very much, Mary. That's
always
great.
The cutest little stickers.
I know.
Love it.
We'll have to get our train station lights back up and running. We'll have to talk to Sam Crenshaw.
They're blue because that's blue.
Are they?
Maybe. Yeah.
That might be the case.
Ken's colorblind, if you guys didn't know.
I wanted to talk about the right expectations for a second, because some people would say, well, like, that's ridiculous. Why would you drive 50 feet to do walking training.
I'm a smart dog trainer.
But this is exactly why mm-hmm. we very quickly get the dogs trained. We very quickly help students to train their dogs because we give them these tips. But we also, there's accountability there. Like we're saying, you could make it easier. The thing that I learned really quickly was that, allowing my dog to rehearse the bad stuff was so much worse than not doing the training. The moment I changed...
Especially when it's self-rewarding.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and that self-rewarding doesn't mean, your dog's pulling towards something. They don't have to get there. It could be the act of pulling towards that thing.
Excited, heightened state totally. Is really fun for a dog to be in.
Totally, yeah. So changing your training plan and making yourself accountable for, the decisions that you're making when you set out to train your dog. This is before you've even stepped out the door. You're like, okay, what are my expectations? What am I going to struggle with? What am I going to go out of my way to avoid? Listen, we have students from, Manhattan to the mountains of Maine. That was good. I'm glad I connected all those M's. But, everyone is able to find some space that will work to get those foundations built as they build up their expectations for their dog. Lots of links. Luton, drop in the super chat. This is amazing. We haven't seen lots of links in a super chat in a long time.
Dan, you are so ridiculous. Just because you guys are on the wild side tonight, not now, but before the end of the show, thumb war. Loser eats a dog treat.
This is that takes us back to season one
that
or season
does.
Two.
We used to have ridiculous competitions, and then one of us would have to eat dog
it's
treats
the old
after.
School.
I never had to eat a dog treat, guys.
Yeah, it's true. But
I'm not so sure about my thumb war skills, but I'm willing to give it a try.
Going out of your way, really setting those expectations high, going out of your way so to set your dog up to be successful is a great move. Which brings us to the next point, because this is something that's so common, and I feel bad for people that are working their butt off. They feel like they're making the right choices, but just not quite working. And they're like, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's not working right here. And that is collar fit.
Yes.
This comes down, we talk a lot about equipment. If you're using a harness and you're struggling with leash walking training, stop using the harness. We want you to be on a neck collar or a head collar, the gentle leader. We can talk a little bit about the gentle leader later. But having the right fitment on your dog, if you're struggling with leash walking, is going to make a huge difference. Why is collar fitment even important?
Yeah, it is. It's important because the type of equipment you use with your dog is going to help you with having good timing. It's going to give you better control. Also, from the dog's perspective, if they're on a poorly fit collar that's too loose or too skinny, and the dog can, flip around and feel like they can escape, at any time, they sometimes think that there's a possibility there, and they aren't as relaxed. They aren't as apt to be under control. So it's important to have well-fit equipment, good quality equipment that you can use correctly. And if you don't know how to use it correctly, that's where we come in
right.
to help you with that. But another important thing is that, one thing that we know about dog training is that every dog is a little bit different. And I wanted to say, just saw a comment come up about the YouTube channel. Our YouTube channel is amazing, and you've probably found us because you've watched, so many of our videos, which is awesome. But I'm going to tell you that our YouTube videos give you a sliver of information that you need to use in order to walk your dog on a loose leash. It also, we try to give general information so that most of the people watching, it's going to work for their dog.
Yeah.
But what happens with dogs is every dog is a little bit different. So when we get people that come to our classes or sign up for online and we get to know those dogs, I can usually tell within 60 seconds of meeting a dog what kind of equipment they should be trained on based on their body type, based on their excitement level, based on their training, based on the person's ability. I'm able to match that person and that dog up with good equipment. And sometimes it's just a regular collar. Sometimes it's a gentle leader. Sometimes it's a specific leash. There's lots of things that we can do that will set the person up for success. So it's really, really important that we have good equipment, because sometimes one thing doesn't work on every single dog. We need to adapt it.
I just saw a comment about equipment. So,
okay.
The fitment of the collar, having it maybe, did you talk specifically about the dog not allowing, being fit right so that it can't slide down.
I did
to
not.
The bottom of
I was gonna.
Chest.
I don't. We don't have a buckle collar.
I don't think so.
Lying
Sam.
Right.
Sam, do we have a collar in the closet?
I have lots of collars, but none of Let's which see. Are appropriate to show right now.
Okay. So, what does that mean?
It means that there's like beads and
they're not like training collars.
They're like show collars, fancy collars. Yeah. They're not like the dog's training collars.
Kill has lots of fancy collars.
I might have a bit of a problem, guys. Yeah. So
yeah.
All of the dogs have their own vibe.
Let's talk briefly about equipment. I saw someone say like does a leash really matter?
Yeah.
Like what about a retractable leash?
Mm-mm. Actually, let's talk about retractable leashes and why they're horrible for teaching walking. You know, the thing that's difficult about retractable leashes is, you know, when your dog is able to get out to the end of the leash, you know, when they're 30 feet away from you, 15 feet away from you, it's very difficult to have good control over them. And you might think to yourself, well, I can just, you know, push the button and it stops it from retracting. But the thing, what we want to do with teaching our walking, so what McCann's, what our expectation is for dogs, is that they learn to walk on a loose leash. And we actually talk about like a gentle J. So when the clip is attached to the dog's collar, we actually want that clip pointing towards the ground so that the leash has zero tension on it. We train the dogs to have what's called leash respect. So when the leash is on, we train the dogs never to put tension on the leash, so they learn to keep it loose. Whether they're at our side, they can be a little bit in front of us. All of that is okay, but there should be no tension. And where the retractable leash comes in is the retractable leash always has tension. Mm-hmm. And this can be a little bit confusing, especially for dogs in training, that sometimes they wear a leash that's always tight. And then sometimes they're told, no, you're never allowed to have a tight leash. And that can be a little bit confusing. Now, I use a retractable leash sometimes with my trained dogs. I have a 16-year-old dog that is completely deaf at this point.
Yeah.
We walk her on a flexi line, a retractable leash, because it gives her a little bit more freedom and it allows me to keep her safe because she can't hear me. But I would never train a dog on one because it doesn't give me good control or timing. And it does send the dog mixed messages.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just not a very versatile.
It can be dangerous too.
Not a very versatile leash. We
point. 6-foot leashes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we prefer leather in material because they are nicer to hold. They have a little bit of give to them.
Yeah.
They last for years and years and years and years. I have had leashes that are 30 years old. They're unbelievable.
I still have Dee's first leash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not 30 years old. That makes me sound very old. That's a bit of an exaggeration. I would say like 25.
I have. It doesn't help that much. I mean, Dee's leash has got to be 17 years old now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's still great. And it was a McCann dog's leash. It was the first leash I think I bought, like, intentionally.
It lasts forever.
Yeah. Kale talked a little bit about tension. The other thing that you can't do. So we talk a lot about working towards a situation where your dog is walking in at your side because you've given them great information, not because they're on leash. What we're training towards is the idea that the leash is there, but your dog doesn't even realize it because they're making great choices in at your side. They're walking on a loose leash. And during that training period, as you need to redirect them or, you know, turn them away from stuff or whatever, keep them from, you know, becoming running out in the street or doing something crazy on you, you need to be able to slide that hand down the leash and give them, you know, turn them. It's better to be able to give them specific information with your hand sliding down the leash, which you can't do on a retractable leash, and then down by the clip of their collar, being able to like guide them back or bring them back to your side or whatever the situation is. It's valuable to be able to give them that specific information rather than being at the end of a thing where there's like 6 or 7 or 12 feet out. Now you can't really give them specific information. The same thing applies to a harness. The nice part about having that head control with the collar being up high, nice flat buckle collar. Actually, I think we have a package that's available tonight. That is, we'll put a discount on.
Dogs That Pull?
Yeah, Dogs That Pull package.
Bundle.
I think, Dan, lots of links have just put it in. So, flat buckle collar. It's just a simple nylon collar that's got, you know, single hole, it's adjustable. That's the best place to start with your leash walking training because it gives the dog great information and it's so easy. It's a versatile collar, easy to clean, but it's so easy to, work your way off of having to have a leash on the dog all the time. Talking about tension, which is number 3. It's so important. This is the thing that I didn't really understand. You know, we talk a little bit about, there's so many breeds. If you have a sled dog, a snow dog, a husky, Malamute, something like that. I mean, those dogs are trained to pull.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to learn, and we've had lots of them in classes learn this. People say like, oh, you know, it's a sled dog. They just love to pull. They don't, they might, but you can very quickly teach them to not pull.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't use the breed as an excuse. If your dog, if there's tension on your leash, you're doing something wrong. So as you're working in your training, if you're about to reward and you realize all of a sudden, like, oh boy, there's this leash is tight. That's not the time to reward. Get your dog back in position. If you accidentally add to, this happens all the time, you know, don't feel silly if this happens, but people will turn into the Statue of Liberty, and we see it all the time. But they're walking along, their dog's doing a great job. They'll go down to reward their dog, and then they bring their hand up, and it adds tension to the leash. Now we're rewarding our dogs on a tight leash, exactly the opposite thing we want to be doing. So if you're going through your walking training and you identify the fact that my leash is tight, something isn't right with the situation, don't reward them at that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Really important. Now, I saw a comment that I want to speak to that I liked, because this is, it's that time of year. And Diane said, blowing leaves and squirrels. That's probably the biggest challenge.
It's very exciting.
So the next point that I want to talk about is being proactive. Proactive versus reactive in your leash walking training. So it can be, we see students who, as you're learning your leash walking, we see students who struggle a little bit, and we have to coach them through this, but they're like paying attention to all, there's lots going on, you know, leash gathered up the right length, you know, you have your dog in at your side, you're insisting that they remain in at your side, and then you start moving forward, and there's things happening around you. Well, what if you could work on these activities in your hallway to sort of get the hang of things? You're proactively like figuring out how you hold your leash, how you reward your dog. And then you decide, okay, that's going well. Let's go out into the driveway. Are you being proactive enough to think time of day? What kind of distractions am I going to run into? Mm-hmm. What sort of struggles am I going to have? And how can I make it less of a struggle? It's really important to set that game plan up ahead of time, because the last thing you want to be doing is going out for a walk and then, oh, leaf, oh, squirrel, oh, thing, oh, here goes a car, oh, yeah, there's another dog. All of these situations make it really challenging for you to be successful. It's also too much for your dog at this level of their training if you're struggling with leash walking. So I really want you to think about being proactive. The other thing that I see or I hear often, maybe you're at this, let me know if you're at this point. You go out for a walk, things are going pretty well. Then someone is across the street, or someone is down the street, or there's a dog at a house that you're walking by, and you lose control. You know, you just completely lose control of your dog. Let me know if that's you in the chat.
Can I just give a realistic example?
Oh, I'd love for you to.
Well, I was going to give it even if you said no, but we'll use the leaf blowing thing with reactive versus a proactive versus reactive. So if I was being reactive, that would be kind of what Ken was saying. I'm out for a walk with my dog. I'm not really expecting, you know, the neighbor to all of a sudden, you know, blow leaves or that thing machine to turn on or whatever the situation is. And now all of a sudden I'm having to like deal with a dog that's already at a heightened state, which is very, very difficult.
Yeah.
To bring them back down to reality. So, you know, and you can and you should and you have to work hard on that. But if I feel like this is a potential problem that could happen with leaves or with other things, what I want to do is be proactive and try to give my dogs a taste of these experiences in a setting in which I can control. So if I know this could be a potential issue, or maybe I experience it and I think, well, that didn't really go well, how am I going to prevent this from happening in the future? Well, I can go home and I can say, Ken, can we spend 10 minutes outside? You get the leaf blower out. I'm going to get the puppy out. I'm going to get my leash. Going to get my bait bag. I'm going to get my thing out. Yeah. He blows leaves like on the other side of the lawn. And I practice some sits at my side or some, you know, few moments of walking or some stays, response to name, tugging out, whatever it is. And then he could come a little closer. That's being proactive. That's showing my dog, hey, see what's happening over there? Don't worry about that. We're doing stuff together here, and now I can control how far I am from that distraction, how long I want the distraction to happen, because at any time I feel like my dog is like losing their brain, I can yell to Ken and say, cut it, so that I can work through it. So then if I do that a couple times, I'm going to see progress. And then when I head back out into the real world again and I get that leaf blower, I have a dog that says, ooh, last time this situation happened, I turned and looked at you and you rewarded me, or you played tug, or we had a lot of fun together. And I'm reconditioning him how to react and how to behave in those situations. The problem is that people want to give their dog this magic pill or this magic tool or this quick answer to fix these things. Yeah. And what's very difficult about many dog behaviors, but specifically walking on leash, is that there isn't a quick fix, especially if you've now spent weeks or months rehearsing poor walking. Unfortunately, you have a little bit of work to do, and we're going to be truthful with you about that, because we know how dog training works, and it does take a bit of work. And if you can set aside some time to train your dog rather than test your dog, circling all the way back to the expectation thing, you will see a difference. But again, these are things that we do in our programs, because sometimes people don't know how to break it down, because, you know, it's sort of thinking from a dog training perspective rather than your normal every day. You got a dog, you want to take it for a walk. Right. That's what happens.
Yeah, that's the worst mistake.
To us, that's the goal.
Yeah.
We got a dog with the eventual goal of taking our dogs for a walk, going for hikes. You know, our dogs do all kinds of things like that, but they don't as puppies until they're trained.
Yeah, actually, let us know in the chat. What do you do for exercise for your dog? Just let me know. I don't want to guide the conversation, but it's really important to understand that if you're struggling with leash walking and you feel like it's not going well, stop taking your dog for a walk. Stop letting them pull you down the street. You need to be training your dog how to walk on leash. That doesn't mean you're just not going to go anymore. It means that you're going to work in tiny little sections, insisting on great results, working down the driveway, working 30 feet and then coming back. But you're going to need something to replace.
Dogs need exercise.
They need exercise. And in fact, you know, the more they're exercised, the less trouble they're going to get into, the easier your next walking training session is going to be. You know, it just takes that edge off a little bit.
The fitter they are, the longer they live.
Right. It's so true. Yeah, there's an interesting stat about trained dogs living longer than untrained dogs.
I can believe that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it makes me wonder if it's a correlation or causation thing. You know, how much of that is a more intentional dog owner that's, mm-hmm. you know, careful about the decisions they make
with
their
dog. Knows their dog better.
Knows their dog better. You can identify problems earlier. I think
I'm too good at that.
Yeah. So Ashley says tug for sure. Yeah, we love tug for
tug and fetch.
Yeah.
I love playing fetch.
I see tug dogs. Fetch and hide and kibble all over the house for my corgi to go sniff.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, tug and fetch, hide and seek. Barb Mills also likes hide and seek. Yeah, nice. We actually did a video talking about how you could do hide and seek, and I think it was Instructor Carol, and it might have been like a response to Name Game that she'd come up with, but that was a fun video. Yeah, maybe you could find that. I mean, I don't know if it's.
We have a couple of things. We also have that one that I did. It was during COVID.
Yeah.
Games that you can play with your dogs in the living room.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right.
And just we were all stuck inside. So, how do you keep these dogs busy?
Totally. I mean, honestly, this is exactly the kind of stuff you need to be doing to supplement your walking training. So rather than going out and getting dragged around the block, you're going to do these short walking training sessions, and then you're going to do some of the playing tug, playing fetch if your dog has a great fetch. Doing some of the mental exercises. Exercising your dog's brain is a great way to exercise them more wholly, you know, having them feel more tired at the end of the night. If you do just trick training, like, it's so simple. It doesn't sound like it's super, it's not great exercise, and it isn't great physical exercise, but it's great mental exercise. So adding that to your training plan, it'll make a world of difference. You will be surprised how valuable that will be for you and your dog. So talking about, what did we just talk about? Being proactive versus reactive. Understanding, so let's talk about, I saw a few of you guys that were struggling with, there's something coming down the street, or your dog sees the neighbor, or something happens. What are you going to do? How are you going to be proactive about that? One of the strategies is turning. I mean, we have 1,000 videos on YouTube, more than that now. We talk about turning in a lot of them. What does turning mean when it comes to leash walking training, and how can it be used proactively to help people to have better walking training?
So we use change of direction. Specifically, we like doing like an about turn with the dog so that the dog is able to maintain position at our side. But we do it for a number of reasons. Number one, it puts us back in the driver's seat because we're now choosing the next direction. And then more importantly, it helps to move the dog further away from the distraction. Sometimes the go-to thing for people is when the dog is distracted and they're wanting to go and pull towards something, people like to put tension on the dog's leash to pull them away from whatever they're distracted. And they often just want to do like a wide berth around the distraction and then keep going with where they're going. But during that process, your dog is continuing to pull on the leash as you're doing that and then get totally disconnected from you. Both things that we're trying to avoid in that moment. So we actually find it's a lot more effective to, you know, keep your eyes on the road ahead to make sure you can predict things that are coming. And then if your dog starts to speed up or they start to get a bit distracted, they want to go to pull, you're going to do a 180 degree turn and literally walk in the other direction and get farther and farther and farther away from the distraction. And at some point, your dog's going to be far enough away and you're going to be engaging and using your body language and, you know, adjusting the leash and all of those things appropriately that your dog's going to go, oh, wait, do you want my attention? Totally. And then that's your little window to say yes. And then you can reward your dog at that point. But the changing of direction makes such a big such a big improvement. In fact, I'll do that even when there's no distractions around. I will do like sort of look like a bit of like ping pong ball, but I will go back and forth. Or sometimes too, if my dog is a little bit further along in their walking training, but I'm getting things like the dog forging ahead or sometimes like cutting across from me, I'll actually do turns, but I'll turn to my left. So the dog has to actually back up out of my way and I'll walk in a big circle to my left. So the dog is on the inside of the turn. And so they have to kind of learn to back up and stay out of my way. And each time they sort of yield to me, then I can yes and reward them and they go, oh, this sweet spot is at your left-hand side. You really like it when I'm there. So that can be accomplished way, way, way faster and more clearly with turning rather than going straight.
Yeah, and you know, to speak back, someone had said like, well, what kind of collar is it? A flat buckle collar, super standard dog collar. There's nothing that interesting about it. It is the most simple of collars. It's not dynamic. Yeah. It doesn't tighten. It just stays at a certain size. But this is why a head collar or a neck collar is a way better training tool is in situations like this, when you do need to be proactive and guide your dog away from disaster, the pivot point is their head. So now where your head goes, your body follows. Dogs are exactly the same way. So as you guide their head in a different direction, maybe it's a turn to the right, maybe it's a turn to the left, whatever, their body naturally follows. You're not struggling with, you're not pulling out treats all the time. You're not struggling with, well, geez, I can't quite get, you know, it's the pivot point's the center of their body. They're spinning around in a circle. It doesn't have to be that difficult. You can give them clearer, better information if you just guide them away from that distraction. And once they get back in position, pour on the treats. Like you can absolutely reward them like crazy when you're getting that nice loose leash walking back at your side. The other thing that we should talk about is your voice. Now, this was a real struggle for me. I noticed over the years of being a dog trainer, this is generally guys struggle with this more than you ladies. Guys are just a little bit like more, I don't know, they're more reserved. Maybe when they're training a dog.
It's just not as fun.
Yeah, well, they aren't. You guys, we're just not as fun when we're training a dog. And I'll tell you, you watch a room full of dog trainers. We have a handful of incredible dog trainers, McCann dogs that are male, and they're the loudest ones in the room. Like they can be bubbly and outgoing because they know how impactful that is for the dog. Now, that doesn't mean you need to be squeaky and whiny. It's about whatever connects to your dog.
It's pretty good.
You've probably seen videos where Kale is teaching a puppy. I mean, it depends on when you found the channel, but where Kale's training a puppy and people always comment on her voice. She uses that voice two reasons. Number one, she's genuinely like that. Like when we're recording a video, she is genuinely that excited when, the puppy does something great or when she captures a great moment or whatever. But it's also effective. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about using your voice in a leash walking scenario and how people might think you're crazy, but here's why it's valuable.
I was just laughing to myself because I was just editing some training videos for my agility programs, and I was training my puppy. I call him a puppy, but he's almost 2 years old. And the video was about 15 minutes long, and I pared it down to about 7 minutes. And everything that I erased was literally just me, like, playing and cheering and playing and cheering. I thought, oh my gosh, how long does somebody want to watch this? So I had to edit it all out because it was getting, I was even getting annoyed by it. But my dog loves it.
Yeah.
Anyways, I forget what you asked me.
Just talking about the value of using your voice in leash walking. What, like, why?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So using your voice in leash walking can do a couple things. You could use it proactively to get your dog's attention back on you if you think that they're going to be distracted. We teach the dogs to respond to the a command, leave it. So if I see or feel my dog disconnecting and going towards a distraction, I could say leave it and then do my little about turn, go the other direction. But I also can use it to mold and shape my dog's behavior to be what I like. So I need to make sure that when I'm praising my dog or when I'm marking when my dog is correct. So we use the word yes when our dog is correct. And then we, in addition to the word yes, use praise. So, if I look down and my dog had a loose leash, check. My dog had good position on my left-hand side, check. My dog was engaging with me, checking in from time to time. That would cause me to say yes and then get out a reward for my dog during the training. And I would do that. There's no cap as to how many times I would do that. I would continue doing it as long as I was getting what I wanted. But sometimes what happens is the dog isn't doing, all three things perfectly. Or maybe you give the dog a treat and they think, oh, I'm so great. And then they, disengage. I might give my dog a treat. And then even though I have no food in my hands, I can actually still keep engagement from my dog by continuing to use my voice. But if I'm completely quiet and I'm not really exuding a lot of energy, dogs will be dogs and they're going to be attracted to, movement and noise and things that are happening around you. So if you can keep yourself a little bit more animated, a lot of dogs are like, what is going on up there? This is really exciting. And I can keep my dog's focus. I will say this though, is sometimes people do make such a wonderful effort of using their voice and engaging. But if you actually look to see what's happening, sometimes people, although they sound wonderful, they actually are doing the voice with very poor timing. Dog's leash will be tight or the dog's sniffing and you see the person going, good dog, not good dog in that moment. So you also want to make sure that when you're using your voice, that you're using it in good timing. So again, you're molding and shaping your dog to do the right thing. So voice is so important, how and when you use it.
Yeah, I mean, and when you use it, there might come a time where your leash needs to do the talking.
Yep.
You're going to stop praising. You're going to turn the other direction. It is important that you're not using your... Don't think that your voice is going to solve every problem. It's nice to get your dog's attention. It's a great way to bridge the time between rewards. Maybe you're at the point right now where you're like, geez, I'd love to use less treats on walks. That's where your voice comes in. Your voice is a powerful tool to bridge those rewards. And then, your dog gets out of position or whatever, you're going to stop praising, get them back in position, and continue walking. Once they're there, mm-hmm. you can pour those, use that praise again. Really use your voice.
Yeah.
We have to, if we're talking about voice, we have to talk about speed. Mm-hmm. We have to talk about the speed because I know that it probably seems like a lot right now. And as the more you practice your leash walking, the better you're going to get at it, obviously. But when you might be at a point right now where you're thinking about all the things. Like, what did I hear in the train station last night? Like, okay, I need to think about my voice. I need to remember turning. What's my proactive training plan? And as you start going and you're thinking about all these things, you're walking really slowly. And this is exactly why so many dogs struggle in the initial stages. Now, this is something we'll actually do as we proof through some of the skills with our life skills students. But like as we build out the dog's skill set, early in their training, we want to keep the speed up. Now, it's not like running, but we want to walk at a purposeful pace. Why is a purposeful pace so important at the very beginning of the leash walking training?
It's so important because it helps to keep the dog's attention. We always tell our students, try and walk like you're late for something. Or I always joke, like, walk like you have to go to the bathroom really bad. Like, really, like, walk with pace. And that, a lot of dogs are like, holy cow, where are you going? And then they want to kind of keep the pace. When people walk slowly, it's really, it's really easy for the dog to disengage and to start looking around. Now, the tips that we're giving you are not what your walking needs to look like forever. You don't need to be hunched over, you know, with treats in your dog's nose. You're not going to be, you know, using this crazy voice the entire time. You're not going to be speed walking the entire time. Eventually, we're working towards being able to walk like a normal person down the street and our dog just knows how to hang out with us. But there's additional things that we do in the teaching phase of training, which is what we're highlighting tonight, where we do things a little bit extra to kind of make our dogs have an easier time doing exactly what we want them to do.
Totally.
But I think it's important to say that we do wean off of this stuff eventually. But sometimes people don't think about adding more voice or changing up the speed of their walking or even changing direction. But again, these are teaching tactics that we do because we know it re-engages the dog. And when you have a dog that's focused, you have a dog that's earning more rewards, you have a dog that's happier to do the job, you have a person that is enjoying walking the dog at that point, and it all becomes, you know, a wonderful moment.
Well, how many people have a dog that's constantly sniffing the ground or, you know, searching the floor for treats and that kind of thing?
Yeah.
You know, this is exactly what that dog needs. They need to move more quickly. They need to, you know, understand that, listen, buddy, we're going somewhere, and you're going to naturally notice that dog checks in with you. Here's the other thing. You become way more fun. We talked a little bit earlier about you need to be interesting to your dogs. If you're not, if your dog is completely blowing you off, it's because you're not that interesting. You haven't done enough to get their attention. You haven't done enough to build value on you. So increasing your speed is a simple way to do that. It's really great. It's a really important first step when we're talking about trying to make it a little bit easier for your pup. Now, I have a video that I cut out because I wanted to talk about this. We need to talk a little bit about location and kind of time of day, but I wanted to talk about, you might feel like you're struggling as soon as you go out the door. You might feel like, geez, my walking goes well until I get to the park, and then everything falls apart. You need to understand, going back to number one, expectations. What's the expectation you have for your dog? If you expect them to make mistakes at a certain point, I have an exercise that I want to introduce to you that Instructor Carol did. This is an old video, but I thought it was really appropriate for tonight's audience. So let's take a look at that. Okay, good for audio?
Great.
See, Lucy's pretty excited about getting over there. We're about to go through the gate and she's anticipating that. You ever have that? You're leaving your house, your dog can't wait to go, they're pulling your arm off. Or they're fighting you to get out of that car to get to the park. Well, we're gonna change the game a little bit. In order to get where she wants to go, she's gonna have to focus on me. So
for those of you who the moment you go out the door, your dog bursts through, what if you spend a little bit of time in the doorway? What if you spend a couple of minutes on your landing getting some attention so that you know that your dog, it wants to be outside, wants to go outside? Well, what if the only way they could get that was through you? So keep that in mind. If you're struggling, the moment you step out the door, this exercise, Carol's going to show it on a park gate. But this could apply to the front door of your house, too, if that's where your dog starts to fail.
My value's going way up because I provide that great area. Let's see how I work it. Ready? Oh, we're pulling. Oh, I exist. I do, yeah. Oh, good girlie.
Now, this might take some patience. And that's exactly what Instructor Carol is insisting on here. She's not going, it's not about, when you go for a walk, it's not about getting to a place, it's about training. Mm-hmm. And this is what Carol knows. If she doesn't get through the gate today, so be it. This is about training. This moment is about teaching Lucy to pay attention to her before she goes through that gate.
Better. So when she's on a loose leash, I'll praise her. Yay. Good girl. And I don't need to reward with food because she's getting what she wants by going through there. That's the best reward ever.
Carol was talking.
Yes. Good girl. Good girl. Oh, a little bit of tension. Black and white.
Now, we talked a little bit earlier about tension, and Carol said, listen, we're not going anywhere. There can be no tension on this leash. What if you applied those same principles to your dog training? How clear would it be for your dog? This is, we muddy the water so quickly, stuff like this. When there's tension on the leash, you know, if we're black and white about these things, your dog's going to learn it faster.
Yes. Good girl.
Okay, stop for a sec. I don't know if you guys, that happened very quickly, but that time Lucy went to the end of the leash just now. The second she felt tension, without Carol doing anything, she snapped back to make the leash loose. So she's starting to understand that you're not to go forward unless the leash is loose. Leash is loose. So Lucy actually adjusted independently that time, which was pretty cool.
Oh, did you stammer a little bit?
Right? Shut up.
Nice. Yes.
See? Oh,
the good girl. Oh, I gotcha. One more time.
And I mean, we are, there's no room for gray, you know? Lucy was ever so gently pulling on that leash, but Carol said, listen, there'll be no leash pulling.
But what I love about what's happening is when she's backing up, she's doing so until Lucy reengages.
Totally.
She's not just dragging the dog back and not giving the dog any information.
She's backing up.
And then when the dog is looking right back up at her, then she starts to add the praise again. So, you know, when we're training our dogs to do something, we need to let them know when they're wrong by, you know, in this case, we're stopping the forward motion, not allowing the dog to proceed forward. But then we always need to follow that up with telling the dog when they're right. So now that we have the engagement, we go back to using that well-timed praise.
Totally.
Yes. Ready?
So Carol's going to help her a bit more now with her voice to help her. Oh,
hello. That's it.
Oh.
So she got to lie down, and then we must have cut the scene.
Just when it was getting exciting.
Yeah, so what you saw at the end was Lucy just was like, okay, I get it. You know, I'm not going to charge through that gate, and that's I can't help it being a
dog trainer. I could just continue watching that.
Yeah, honestly.
It's interesting.
I mean, here's the reality of it. If you're that clear with your dog, you know, it makes more sense. It also makes more sense for you. You start to draw a line in the sand. This is what my expectations are. This is what I'll allow. This is what I won't allow. You know, this is, you know, my, you guys in life skills online or in class, you talk about like writing a journal, like what my dog struggles with. But knowing these things and being that intentional about your dog training is exactly where you need to be putting that mental energy. This is what I didn't do when I was a student. Like, I just didn't understand the value. And then you start to see other students I became a dog trainer and started to help other students. And I thought, man, the people that commit the time and energy to being black and white and very specific about their expectations, they're miles past everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that might be the thing that solves the struggles for you.
I'm giggling because the online team is making fun of me saying, Loose leash Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tongue twister.
So, a location, time of day. The other thing you need to be considering when you're out for a walk is, we spoke about this at the beginning, taking your dog for leash walking training at 3 or 4 in the afternoon when all the kids are coming home from school, it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
After dinner at 6 p.m. When the park's busy, bad idea for that dog in training. You're going to get there, but that might be overwhelming for your dog. If you're still struggling with leash walking, you need to be really intentional about the time of day you choose, the location you choose to train your walking. If you're telling yourself like, wow, that sounds like a lot of work. It is. It is a lot of work, but it's so worth it. And it's going to make a difference. It'll make a difference in your training.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about head control. Now, if you've gotten this far and you're thinking like, boy, my dog's too strong. My dog pulls too much. I don't think I can ever do that turn with them. I can barely control them when they get out and they want to, you know, get down the street to that other dog. We talk about a tool, very specifically, a tool called a gentle leader. It's not a halty, but it's a head collar. We choose this tool specifically for a few reasons. Can you talk a little bit about what the gentle leader does, sort of its value set and why we choose it?
So the gentle leader is a head collar. There's a loop that goes around their nose, sits quite far back so the dog still can open their mouth and do everything. And then it has one loop that goes up behind the ears and it sits very high up on the dog's head, right below their ear line for a specific reason. And it deals with the premise of pressure rather than pain. So it doesn't hurt the dog at all, hence gentle leader. So you can gently lead them around. But it does deal with pressure. And why this works so well with dogs is that when they pull or when you need to redirect them, they get a little tension, a little pressure in that area right up behind their ears, in their sort of scruff area. And this is sort of the same location that their mom would have grabbed and disciplined them with when they were a puppy. Now, the Genaleader is certainly way more passive than like a mother dog grabbing a puppy and disciplining them, but the premise is sort of similar. The dog understands it. But the other cool thing about it is when the dog pulls forward, we have an opportunity to control their head so we can turn them away from distractions much more easily. Or if they're really sniffing and trying to get into things, we can lift their head and turn them much more easily. When the leash is attached to a harness, or even for some dogs attached to a collar, which is a very strong part of their neck, sometimes it can be really difficult if that dog is really leaning in with all of their force. Mm-hmm. Why we like the Genaleader specifically over top of other head halters, though, head collars, is because it does have the option that you could wean off of it. So it sort of has two modes. It has the full mode where the nose loop is over the nose and the back piece is behind their ears. And as time goes on and things go well, you're able to slip the nose loop off of the dog and then attach the leash to a little clip underneath their chin, so you just have the remaining strap around their neck, which still sits up nice and high in that more sensitive part of their neck. And again, why we want to do this is our goal is to get great control, but to do it without needing a lot of force and a lot of negativity.
Yeah.
We want to try and be gentle but firm with the dogs, because we want to get the dogs to listen, but we don't want to have to be yanking and being frustrated on the leash. And I really love using gentle leaders, and I find sometimes we have people that are a little bit apprehensive to use them because they feel like, you know, they're failing with their dog training and they feel like it's such like a step back. But, Kale McCann, I'm a great dog trainer.
21-time world champion of dog agility.
I've used a Genaleader with many of my dogs. In fact, Beeline, who is literally a world champion in agility, I walk her into an agility ring on a Genaleader.
I want to talk for a second about how sometimes the benefit of a Genaleader, not only is it with leash walking training, but for some of those dogs who are like a little bit sensitive in some environments, it sort of gives them a sense of calm because they realize that you're the one in control.
Yeah, that is good. You know, when I use it around, dog sports with her, I use it because she's very high-minded and I want to keep her calm. But why we initially introduced it is Bea was quite sensitive and a little nervous around new situations. And when we would take her, to expose her to, downtown or take her to places with lots of people or loud noises, she was a little bit overwhelmed by that. And while we were going through our leash walking training, I didn't want to have her in those situations where I needed to pull on the leash or change directions or do anything that was really extravagant, because she was already feeling a bit uncomfortable. And so I found that when I used the Genaleader in those situations, I could move her more gently and more passively, and it allowed her to get good information, but in a little bit of a less intense way, and it really helped build her confidence. I do want to say that I think I saw somewhere way back in the chat that they use a Genaleader and it just doesn't work. And I want to speak to that because, just like everything, every piece of equipment doesn't work for every dog. But I will tell you that most of the time when I hear that comment from people, it's because they think that when you put a Genaleader on, that the Genaleader is going to train the dog for you. But when you have a Genaleader on the dog, you still have to good timing. You still have to use the leash properly. You still have to understand leash pressure. You still have to understand timing of your preys. It's not the equipment that's doing the work. The equipment is simply helping elevate our dog training skills, we still have to do the work. And typically when it's not working, when I watch that person interact with the dog, the Genaleader is not the problem. It's their timing's off, or they're not holding the leash properly, or they're making the situation too hard for the dog. So regardless of what handling or what equipment that you use, it is a big picture that you need to think about. Genaleaders don't need to be used for every dog. We're simply giving you that as a training tool because we know that lots of people get really good success using one. And again, it's a little bit more passive rather than using some of the harsher methods out there, which is something that aligns with us.
Well, and also the goal is to work away from it. Like, there's not many tools out there that they're there to help you never use it again.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I think we love about it. And we should probably talk to General Leader about a sponsorship. We're not sponsored by them, but we've been.
We should be.
I've seen them. I've seen that product transfer Deegan's walking. Like that. It just
However, the General Leader company does make General Leaders special for us, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because we ask them to.
Yep. Yeah. So for any of the larger size, medium, and large General Leaders, the company actually makes them special for us with a metal buckle rather than a snap.
Yes, it can't
because
break.
It can't break apart.
Also, we're Canadian, and yeah. It gets cold here.
It does.
But anyway, having the right tools, I mean, they are tools. All of these things are dog training tools. All of the... some of the points we've talked about tonight are just tools for you. I mean, using your voice the right way is a tool. Using speed in your training, it's just a tool. You can choose to apply it or not apply it. You can also use it wrong. We need to talk, ultimately, when it comes to leash walking training, as you saw with Instructor Carol, we reinforced with you guys that she was very black and white about her training. I will tell you, the biggest mistake that people make when it comes to leash walking training is they're inconsistent. And this creates a world of challenges for your dog. And you're probably doing it and you're like, well, what on earth am I going to do? Like, how am I going to fix these situations? Like, we need to talk about consistency and like how focusing on consistency can be actually like applied. So maybe it's like a conversation you have with a life skills student.
Yeah, I mean, when you say that, the most common thing that I see is like early in the programs, I see people like get out of their car in the parking lot at the training school,
right.
And their dog drags them across the parking lot, drags them through the lobbies, and then get into the hall, and then all of a sudden the dog walks on a loose leash to their chair.
Right.
And they think like, why is this happening?
It's so true.
Well, because when you come to class and the dog pulls, we address it consistently. We train the dog what to do in this type of scenario, but dogs are not robots. They're very situational learners, and if we are not consistent and we allow them to drag us in some situations, it's like that park story I told earlier. If I allow my dog to drag me to the park, and then when I get there, I let her off leash and play ball, and then you know I let her walk perfectly on a loose leash on the way back, and that's what we do over and over again, and I'm not changing behavior, I'm going to get what I'm getting. That's just what happens. So consistency is really important. Also, dogs really, really appreciate when information and rules and everything is black and white. When we're sometimes trainers and when we're sometimes asking and expecting this and other times asking and expecting this, that can create a lot of confusion for dogs. And sometimes what will happen when dogs are confused is they'll either check out or they'll retract a little bit. They'll get a little bit unsure and they'll show some stress behaviors where they get quite disconnected from their person and they kind of want to avoid. And it's simply because they're confused by what you're asking them because you're so inconsistent. Or we have dogs that say, clearly with your inconsistency, you don't really know what you're doing. So I'm going to lead now. And then they just try to run the show because they figure you're inconsistent. You're not really giving good information. So they need to step up and make all of the decisions. So consistency helps with training. It also helps with relationship. Consistency needs to be you individually with your dog, but it also needs to be among family members.
100%.
What I'm doing with the puppy needs to be the same thing that Ken's doing with the puppy so that it's easier for the pup to go, this makes total sense. It's the same thing every time. Cool. I got it. And they'll love you for that. It makes them feel a lot more comfortable when the information is delivered in that way.
When we talk about these points, whether it's fitment or, you know, tension in your leash or what does a proactive training plan even look like? Maybe you're struggling with, I see this often. My dog won't even take treats when we're out on a walk. When it's things like that, this is exactly where the guidance of a professional dog trainer can help you in something like our in-person life skills program or our online life skills program, where you're actually supported by professional dog trainers.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to touch on briefly what the online or in-person
I think I said this a little bit earlier. I know not all of you may have seen the entire session today, but you know, the thing with actually taking a program, you know, with us specifically, is that once we get to know you and your dog, we are able to make big adjustments or even sometimes small adjustments to what you're doing with your dog to unlock whatever potential your dog has. Because sometimes when we have, you know, we have YouTube videos, we have all of these things, it gives you sort of big picture, but sometimes it's like, I feel like I'm doing that. You think you're doing it. That's and then you do it in front of our eyes and we're able to tell you six things that are a little, you know, that you could do a little differently. And all of a sudden it's like, now you're on the right track. So with our in-person program and with our online program, you have access to such amazing instructors. It's not just Ken and I. Our team of people is so incredible.
I see some of them in here in the chat
And it just allows you to kind of go through the program. Training dogs and puppies can be very frustrating sometimes. And, you know, if you can just have a bit of direction and support, then sometimes it just makes it a little bit easier. We try to help you to understand a little bit more about how dogs think, because it makes you a better dog trainer. And we always joke, McCann dog trainers, we don't take your dog from you and train your dog. Our job is much harder than that. We train you how to train your dog so that when you're at home in everyday life and you're something comes up right or wrong, you know how to say, ah, I know exactly what to do with this issue, and then you're away to the races.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you want to figure out about the programs, just check out the links in the chat, and we'd love to have you. We have also, we have so much fun.
We do, absolutely. Now that you're considering the right expectations for your dog, you know about the fitment of their equipment. When you're thinking about the tension, you are planning.
Don't forget about talking about the bundle again.
For a proactive training plan. When you're talking about turning, using turns in your training, how your voice can benefit you, how speed makes a huge difference in your leash walking training. When you're considering the location and the time of day, you know, if there's too much temptation, let's say, you need to change the location. So think about that as you're training your dog. Talking about head control, maybe a head collar is the right choice. Maybe it is a flat buckle collar that sits up higher, but you need to have a little bit of head control, especially for those really strong pullers. Mm-hmm. And considering, are you being consistent? We do have a package tonight specifically for you guys, 15% off of a leather leash, a flat buckle collar, and a gentle leader. These are all the training things that you're going to need to fix that leash walking, all the tools you're going to need to fix this leash walking problem. Mm-hmm. Now, at the end of tonight's show, you're going to be offered an opportunity to go check out our McCann Dogs music channel. We actually have another YouTube channel, and we've worked with digital music creators to make music that's specifically for dogs. Mm-hmm. If you know, leave your dog home during the day, you can play music and fill that space.
It's awesome.
It's so helpful.
It's all free,
play
too.
In the crate room? Yeah, absolutely. So check that out. With that, with all of the teaching, all of the training, all of the things we've talked about tonight, the rest, my friends, well, that is up to you.